Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. I'm your host, Dan Canobio. I'll be with you for the next hour or so. Jam-packed episode we have for you. Jarrell Big Baby Miller joining the program. Danny Jacobs potentially joining the program. Talking to his manager right now, Keith Connolly, trying to nail down Danny Jacobs. We do have Jarrell Big Baby Miller. As we know, he's fighting November 11th on HBO. But before we get to that, a lot of stuff going on in boxing right now. We have Wilder Stiverne 1 week away. A dramatic conference call went down last week with Deontay Wilder and Stiverne. Wilder, I think he is starting to hear the criticisms, starting to get a little bit annoyed with everything that's going on with his career right now. Obviously wanted Luis Ortiz, couldn't get him, had to settle for Bermain Stiverne, a fight that not the public wasn't exactly clamoring for. And you have to think that a lot of the talk about Anthony Joshua and trying to get that fight and Joshua's popularity is starting to get into the mind of Deontay Wilder, because he touched on that in the conference call. But he does have a fight with Bermain Stiverne 1 week away. It will be a rematch of their first fight, a fight where he won his title, and he has defended it numerous times, but he won that title versus Bermain Stiverne. One thing you can look for in this fight is that it was the only fight that of Deontay Wilder's career in which he did not record a KO. Stiverne did go the distance. I don't think this one will go the distance, but nonetheless, Deontay Wilder, Stiverne, 1 week away. In addition to that, it's also the final stretch of what has been an outstanding year in boxing. 2017 has been a boxing fan's dream. We've had so many big fights take place in 2017, and the final quarter of the year is a time when boxing kind of usually slows down after Thanksgiving. Not the case this year. We still have Wilder Stiverne 2, as we talked about. Showtime Sean Porter fighting once again. Jacobs Arias on HBO November 11th. Hopefully Danny Jacobs joins the show and we can talk to him about that fight in addition to what he sees in his future at 160. I saw him at Gleason's gym last week for the HBO media workout. Looking fit, Danny Jacobs looking good. He was in great spirits. He looks like he has, like a second wind in his career. He's 30 years old, around that age, and he's ready to move forward after the Golovkin fight, which kind of like put him on the map, so to say. So Danny Jacobs looking good. He's ready for his fight with Arias. Kovalev returns November 25th on HBO. New trainer, so we'll see what with Kovalev has to bring to the table, obviously coming off of back-to-back losses to Andre Ward. We also have the super fight, the hardcore boxing fan Super Bowl. Rigo Loma going down in early December at the theater at MSG. That's a fight that's also on the calendar and a lot of people are clamoring for. It's probably the biggest fight remaining in 2017. We also have BJ Saunders versus David Lemieux, December 16th, going down in Montreal in the hometown of David Lemieux. Going to be an excellent fight. So a lot of big fights in 2017 still on the calendar. But we have to start the show off with Anthony Joshua's performance Saturday night in front of 78,000 fans in Cardiff, Wales, largest crowd for an indoor boxing match, breaking the record previously held by Ali Spinks 2, and it beat it by 15,000 fans. I mean, when you turned on Showtime and you watched that fight, the first thing you saw was just a massive crowd. 78,000 fans showing up in attendance to watch Anthony Joshua fight in a replacement fighter, a guy that took the fight on 12 days' notice. Mandatory defense for Joshua, but that didn't stop 78,000 fans from packing into that stadium to watch their man, Anthony Joshua, and he put on a good performance. Wasn't outstanding. I mean, he didn't ice him like he said he wanted to. He got him out of there in 10 rounds, and you take a look at the punch stats. Anthony Joshua, what I saw from Anthony Joshua was he was measured. He was poised. He didn't exactly come out blazing, but he did enough to to win the fight and look good doing so. Let's keep in mind that Anthony Joshua is only 28 years old. This is his 20th pro fight. Did he put on the same performance that he did against Klitschko? Not necessarily. People say, I thought he looked relaxed, poised, measured, any word you want to use. Some people say he looked a little sluggish. Maybe because he was carrying some extra weight. Could that be the case? But I would have liked to see him go a little more to the body. He looked like he was loading up a little bit on his punches. He was throwing a lot of head shots, a lot of head. Maybe he wanted to get him out there to please the crowd of 78,000. But he only went to the body for 28 body shots, which accounted for 18%. Not enough if you want to slow down these big heavyweights. So I'm sure Anthony Joshua is going to take something from this fight and move forward because, dude, big fights for Anthony Joshua on the horizon. But let's talk about Carlos Takam first. He was what we thought he was going to be. He was a very strong B-side. I don't want to say gatekeeper because that's kind of it's almost a derogatory term in boxing, but he's more than a gatekeeper. He showed himself. He showed great performance to Khan, and he looked good. I mean, he had those cuts over his eyes that were nasty. The guy could barely see by the 10th round, and I don't have a problem with the stoppage. I mean, he was taking a lot of punishment, take into account the injury to the eyes, the cuts over the eyes. Was it an early stoppage? That's for you to call, but, you know, Joshua was cruising in that fight. But Takam is a fighter that's going to be around. He's going to be a B-side, which everything we've seen out of the heavyweight division is that there's a market for B-sides, and there's a market in the heavyweight division is on fire right now, and that's what's next for Anthony Joshua. Eddie Hearn, his promoter, went into the ring and afterwards said that he wants to see Joshua potentially fight three times in 2018. There's some big names out there. Obviously, Deontay Wilder is the guy that everyone wants to see. Joining Inside Boxing Live right now, he is a name in the heavyweight division. He's Big Baby Jarrell Miller, and he joins us right now. How you doing, Jarrell?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm on my way to McDonald's.
On your way to Mickey D's?
Yeah, I'm ready now. I'll go as far as the Big Mac.
Big Mac for Big Baby. Love it. You got your fight coming up here November 11th. HBO at the Nassau Coliseum. You're fighting Watch here, the tall Polish dude. Big tall guy. Looks like he can play power forward for the Brooklyn Nets. How have you been training for such a tall fighter? How's your training camp going?
Training camp's been well. And I don't think he would make it in football. He's too clumsy, and he's way too slow. Not supposed to, no. But, you know, people give him a lot of credit because, you know, he's been around the game for a while. He's been there with some the best of the best for a little bit, and he lost two times. He stepped up. Now he's fighting an even bigger guy that throws more punches than the other two guys he fought. So, you know, he has a lot in front of him, and I'm going to deal with him accordingly.
Yeah, you talk about his experience. He's been in the ring with Povetkin. He's been in the ring with Klitschko. Do you think come fight night he's going to, you know, use those tactics as a wily veteran? What are you expecting from your opponent come November 11th?
I expect him to come bring the fight to me as much as he can. But we'll see. I hope he's ready. That's all I can say, because I'll be ready.
You there?
Yeah,
go ahead.
I guess you're breaking up a little bit.
Can you hear me? Jarrell, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
All right, go ahead. We'll start with moving forward. I mean, you're facing the guy that's been in there with Povetkin. He's been in there with Klitschko. Are you expecting him to use some veteran tactics in the ring come November 11th?
Yeah, I expect him to come out and do what he does. You know, I'm ready for a great crowd. So it's long overdue. And I'm ready to put fist to face.
Of course, you're ready to put fist to face. And we're talking with Big Baby Jarrell Miller on his way to Mickey D's. So we'll talk about, with you, a lot of people like to talk about your weight and But from what I saw at Gleason's gym at your workout, you can really move in that ring. Where do you expect to be fight night weight-wise as you get into the ring?
Anywhere between 275 and 285 is the goal we're looking at right now. You know, when you see me at Gleason's, I was 290 that day. You know, drop some weight, feeling good. My speed is there, power is there. So, the fight is right here. I don't need to, you know, drop myself on it. Can't even drop any more weight, really. You know, I mean, the main thing is just being functional. You know, throw a lot of punches and come forward. So, you know, if I could do it at 296, I know I can do it at 285 or 275. So, just being comfortable and just getting out of the way that gradually. You know, not taking on diuretics or anything like that to lose the weight. Just doing it, you know, slowly and surely.
Yeah, it's one thing I saw at Gleason's at that workout is you can move. I mean, you can move for a big man. So I do agree with you there that there's no difference between 10 pounds. You're going to come forward and you're going to fight. But this is a very exciting time in your career. I mean, you got some big paydays coming up. You got some big names that are being thrown around to fight with you. How do you try to, like, stay grounded and not get too far ahead of yourself in terms of your career?
Easy. I'm different from a lot of guys. You know, I have kind of like the same routines I've been doing from the beginning of my career. You know, the only thing I've probably added in is, you know, just, you know, eating habits and just staying away from the parties and stuff like that. But usually I'm doing the exact same thing I've been doing since I was an amateur, you know. I've always been a gym rat. I always find a way to, you know, keep myself busy in the gym and have fun when I work out. So I think they're doing the same thing. It's not really changing up the patterns that got me here, you know. You know, like I said, my circle's always been small. It probably still will be small, you know. And I don't plan on really adding too much to it, you know, just having fun and do what I do.
Now, I know you watched the Joshua fight on Saturday night. What did you see there from the big man overseas?
Matter of fact, let's switch the rule for a second. What did you see?
Oh, we want to see what I saw. What I saw from Joshua was he was poised. He was a little more measured than he was against Klitschko. He threw the same amount of jabs as he did power punches. I thought the headbutt kind of gave him a little adversity, but he powered through. I wouldn't say it was a great performance. I would say it was a very solid performance for a guy that, what, has 20 fights in his career?
No, okay. Well, this is how I see it. You're trying to be not too biased, and I totally understand what you mean. Now, if I give you the complicated, I say, listen, he looks very stiff. He looks like he has way too much muscle on. He's for a heavyweight that has 20 fights, that can't have Olympic background, he's way more points than he did. His footwork was very, very stiff as well, you know, for a guy that's a smaller opponent like Takam. You know, Takam didn't do enough to win the fight, but I definitely was an early stoppage. And Takam definitely was coming back on and adding some shots and combinations in there. To me, now, Buckle, from a fighter standpoint, for Big Baby, he looked like total shit because of Jewel. Plain and simple. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
You know, he barely averaged 25, 30 points around in that fight. You know, so, like I said, if he's 255, he's the heaviest ever been in one in his fight. So, like I said, you know, he's England's hype job. He's the money boy now, but that makes it even worse because at this point now, they're really going to try to protect him. They're not going to put him in there for nobody. That can cause problems for him, you know. So, this is a tough situation for other fighters too to get in there and really try to knock him off. Like I said before, they were talking about me and him fighting in the middle, probably early or middle next year. You know, with that kind of performance, trust me, I doubt that he's gonna look my way at this point. You know what I mean? So, but we'll see though. Like I said before, you know, November 11th is what's most important right now, and I'm a comfort bum behind soon.
We're talking with Big Baby Jarrell Miller getting ready for his fight November 11th on HBO. Now, how do you watch these fights? I mean, do you watch with your buddies? Do you watch alone? Are you zoned in? I'm always curious how fighters watch big fights, especially ones that have like direct implications on yourself.
It all depends. Sometimes I be on the move. Sometimes I gotta just look a link on my phone or something like that. Or
yeah.
Like, if I'm in the house, I tune into the network. It all depends, you know. Sometimes I'd be on Instagram, and the fights in England are so early in the day, I'd be on the street running around. Somebody on Instagram, you know, streaming a video on their live or something like that. So it's cool. I mean, there's all different ways, you know, you can find ways to watch the fight. I mean, that's never been an an issue, but it depends on where I'm at. You know, it depends how early in the day it is.
Right.
If it's overseas or at nighttime, if I'm home chilling, you know, everybody knows, so I catch on the TV.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about your fight at Nassau Coliseum, Long Island. I know you're from Brooklyn, but you reside in Long Island. How important is it for you to fight in front of your hometown friends and family as your career is really starting to amp up right now?
No, I mean, it's always great. It's always great, man. You know, it's fun. It's exciting. You know, I can't wait. It's long overdue. But like I said, you know, you take it for what it is, and you got to just go out there, perform, and you know, bigger and better days will come. You know, the main thing is just stay focused and stay of course.
Well, one thing, going back to your fight with Watch here, big tall guy. Obviously, you're rumored to fight anyone from Anthony Joshua to Deontay Wilder. Did that play a role in your decision for here, or is there something you can take away from fighting a tall fighter? Because you might be in the ring come 2018 with some really tall heavyweights.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these guys are tall. Some of them are very, very okay, skilled, but they're not tall enough. Not a lot of them are very skilled. If you really watch them, they don't really have really good jabs. I don't think none of these people have a better jab than me. I can tell you that for sure. You know, none of them go to the body as much as I do, and nobody has the best footwork as I do. So, like I said, I mean, they're okay. They're there, but you know, every fight, my experience, and I've knocked out guys taller than Wach before. You know, so I'm not. Wach is nothing I've ever seen before. You know, maybe he's more slower than a lot of other fighters that I fought at his height. So. You know, it's nothing you can do to go surprise. You know, I watched his footage over 100 times. I watched his fights. I watched his best performances where he lost in his best performances. So there's nothing he's not going to be able to pull on me that I haven't seen before. And he's smart and dirty to score. So that right there is a big no-no on his part. He's smart, somebody that's more conventional, that comes forward, doesn't have a lot of power, slaps, you know, been knocked out a couple times. So, you know, I'm nothing like a Derek Chisora. So I don't know where these English and these Brits come out with a Derek Chisora style, but takes better for me because I know exactly what he's preparing for.
Now, Jarrell, let's get a prediction from you. What happens fight night with you on Saturday, November 11th? How does it end?
Yeah, I see a stoppage. I'm definitely going to fight night for 10th round.
Ninth or 10th round. I like it. All right, Jarrell, before we let you go, a message for the heavyweights. You're a name in the division. You're in a very good spot right now. What is your message to the Anthony Joshuas, to the Deontay Wilders out there, to the Joseph Parkers, anyone who has a belt right now? What is your message to these guys?
Everybody has a belt right now. You guys are belt holders. Nobody wants to be the undisputed heavyweight champion. Well, they just talk the talk. But not, a lot of them are not really walking the walk. But like I said before, they can run, but they can't hide for so long. Big baby numbers come in one fight at a time. And soon the whole world will know my name.
Love it. Love it, man. Enjoy your lunch, and I will see you on fight night. That's Jarrell Miller. Thank you, man. There he is. Jarrell Big Baby Miller. Very confident fighter. He's in a good spot right now. He's in a very good spot. He's moving over to HBO. I'm not sure how much that impacts him, a potential fight with Wilder or potential fight with Joshua, and it's a very fluid situation as we know in boxing. But Jarrell Miller is not someone that's going to shy away from opponents. He wasn't impressed with Anthony Joshua's performance. He said he saw a guy that had too much muscle on, a guy that was headhunting too much, a guy that he thought didn't have the footwork that he has. I'm telling you what, I would love to see Anthony Joshua step in the ring with Big Baby Miller. And if it happens in the U.S., it happens at the Barclays Center, poof, man, that would be unbelievable. That would be a big one because I think that Miller needs the platform to sell. What I'm trying to say is I think that Miller could, with the right platform, could really market himself and sell that fight. And for Anthony Joshua to come over to the States, I mean, we know he's eventually going to do that. I mean, Matchroom is moving their stable or potentially, you know, expanding to the U.S. So why not do that against a guy named, you know, Jarrell Miller? But he's on his way to Mickey D's. I wanted to ask him about his weight, and I was thinking of a, you know, you don't want to bring up someone's weight like that because it's kind of a criticism about him, but it doesn't seem like it's something he's shying away from. What are you up to? I'm on my way to Mickey D's to get a Big Mac and a large fry. So he's not worried about his weight, and I was at Gleason's gym for his workout. The dude can move. He's got really good footwork. He can move in and out. Like he said, he called Watch a punching bag. He's going to get him out of there in the 9th or 10th round. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that, but I'm looking for big things from Jarrell, Big Baby Miller. I'm happy he joined the program. He's a guy that is going to be a force in 2018, and it's going to be hard for a lot of these fighters to avoid. It's time for In Case You Missed It. A lot of stuff going on in the world of boxing right now, so we'll try to catch you up to speed in the crazy world of boxing. Our first item comes from North Carolina, Haseem Rockman Jr. Did you guys hear this story? It is wild. So Haseem Rockman Jr., of course, son of legendary heavyweight Haseem Rockman, had a fight. His was only his second fight of his career. He was going up against a guy making his debut. Rockman was in the ring. His opponent walked into the ring. They did the fighter introductions. And then he decided that he didn't want to fight. So he left the ring, went back to his locker room. There was a lot of confusion from everything I'm reading. And 30 to 40 minutes later, I guess the opponent of Rockman Jr.'s handlers or his promoter went in there and said, "You better get in the ring and fight." But we do see that Haseem Rockman Jr. has another fight November 4th. And let's hope his opponent in that one decides to get into the ring. Our next item, in case you missed it, Terrence Crawford. There is no denying that he will be entering the ring. When? We don't know, but he is going to be mandated by the WBO to fight Jeff Horn. There was a rumor that it could happen in March. This is a fight that I really like. I mean, you had Jeff Horn calling out Mayweather. Jeff Horn calling out McGregor. And I said on the last show, why doesn't Jeff Horn call out someone in his weight class? Why doesn't Jeff Horn call out someone that he can actually fight, like a realistic fight? And Terrence Crawford versus Jeff Horn, it makes a lot of sense for ESPN. It's a fight that can happen in maybe Las Vegas. It's a great chance for Terrence Crawford to introduce himself to a new weight division at 147. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world. It's two tall, rangy fighters. And it's a fight that, you know, a lot of fans want to see. Some people have a problem with Terrence Crawford maybe getting a title shot in his first fight at 147. But, you know, it's a lot of, I mean, if you want to bring that up, how about all the fighters that get title shots that don't deserve it? You know, we're talking about a guy in Terrence Crawford that cleaned out the 140-pound division, undisputed 140-pound champ. So I have no problem with him fighting for a title right off the bat. If anything, it just accelerates the process of him fighting either Errol Spence or Keith Thurman or whoever has all the belts at 147. So I'm all for it. Moving forward with, in case you missed it, Orlando Salido, his fight with Burchelt is off. Burchelt hurt his hand. That fight is off, but there is one scheduled for Salido. He'll be fighting Roman. I believe it's going to stay on December 9th on HBO. Tell you what, Salido is a fighter that fans want to watch. I mean, I wanted to see Salido versus Vargas rematch because that was hellacious. Those were two guys laying it all on the line. Unfathomable punishment by both guys. But, you know, anytime Salido steps into the ring, I will watch. So that's a fight to look forward to 2017 as we end the year on a high note. There's a lot of fights in December, and that's one of them. Another fight in December, in case you missed it, is made between BJ Saunders and David Lemieux, December 16th from Montreal on Showtime. I'm sorry, on HBO, not on Showtime. That is going to be a good one. I mean, you have BJ Saunders, who's going to play the protagonist in this fight. He talks a lot of trash. You know, in his last fight, he had his son go up there and punch Monroe below the belt in the weigh-in. That's another thing I've never seen before in the sport of boxing. But not a lot of people care for BJ Saunders. You know, I was walking around Gleason's gym last week, and people are talking about who do you like in Saunders Lemieux, because it's a 50-50 fight if you want to look at it on paper. And a lot of people are saying, I like Saunders. I like his style. I think it travels well. I think that he's a little more technical than Lemieux, but I want to see him knocked out. I want to see him flattened. And I think that's what a lot of people are thinking, and he's going to be in the ring with David Lemieux, who we all know is a KO artist. We all know is a guy that wants to get back into the discussion at 160. He got decimated by Golovkin, got jabbed to death. I'm sure he wants Canelo. I'm sure Lemieux wants Danny Jacobs. I'm sure he wants all the big names. So, and this is also a title fight. I mean, Saunders has a belt. So if Lemieux should win this fight, it puts him in a very good position to take on some of the other title holders at 160. Same thing for Saunders. If he wins the title, if he wins the fight, puts him in a great spot. So that's another fight to look forward to, 2017, Lemieux and Saunders. In case you missed it, Adelaide Bird. Adelaide Bird is back, and she's judging again. This is ridiculous, but also, you've got to believe it, and it's boxing. I mean, Adelaide Bird supposedly got suspended by the commissioner, Bob Bennett, but did she really? Because there were no fights in between the Triple G fight and the fight that she's supposedly back on as a Mayweather Promotions card. So she didn't miss out on any paydays. She wasn't technically suspended from anything. I mean, it is a joke. I mean, it is what it is. Let's call it what it is. It's a joke that she's allowed to judge again. It's a joke that she didn't really get any punishment from this besides in the public eye. But she's back, and she's judging, and it's on a Mayweather card. So read between the lines there. I know Floyd Mayweather has a lot of pull in Las Vegas, and he has a lot of pull with that commission. So I don't really think it's a coincidence that Adelaide Bird is back judging, especially in Las Vegas, on a Floyd Mayweather Promotions card. Moving forward, in case you missed it, 30 million people didn't miss the fight between Ndam and Murata on ESPN. Think about that for 1 second. 30 million people in Japan tuned into this fight. One out of every three homes was watching this title fight between Murata and Ndam. Staggering, staggering number. Murata is promoted by Bob Arum. Live look at Bob Arum right now. He's smiling ear to ear, salivating at the thought of Murata going up against some of the biggest names in 160. Think about the revenue that he can tap into in Japan. I mean, there's one thing that Top Rank is good at. It's marinating, and it's tapping into markets. They tapped into that Macau market beautifully. So now they have a champ at 160. And he's going to be they're going to try to get him some big fights. I like it. I mean, what's not to like? Boxing is an international sport. It's a worldwide sport, and Top Rank knows that, and they know that they can bring this guy to ESPN potentially. They already did bring him to ESPN, but maybe not at 7 a.m. I know that us at CompuBox, we're counting that that fight, waking up at 7 a.m., not the greatest thing, but I expect Murata to be in big fights down the line. Bob Arum's going to try to get him into the ring with the big heavy hitters at 160. And if you're a guy like BJ Saunders, if you're a guy like Canelo, Danny Jacobs, Triple G, why not fight a guy that can bring 30 million viewers? Think of all the money potential. This is prize fighting. Think of all the money that you could potentially make fighting a guy like that. But Nick, is that all we got?
I think so, Dan. Unless we want to talk about the Jim Lampley thing, calling out made the Mayweather fight, or something. I don't know. What'd you hear about that?
He did. TMZ caught Lampley going to his car, and they said, "Oh, well, you know, Floyd posted a video of him working out. Do you think he's gonna get McGregor again?" And Lampley, they must have caught Lampley at a good time because he just went off. He called the fight a scam, in not so many words. He said that Mayweather basically threw the fight by letting McGregor win the first three rounds. He said that, you know, the guy brought up, would it be a risk for Mayweather to fight McGregor again? And he said, a risk? Are you kidding me? Like, Floyd Mayweather and the word risk do not coincide, as only Jim Lampley can say. And it's interesting because Mayweather did post the video on Instagram of him working out. That's not a coincidence. You know, Floyd. Everything Floyd does, especially on social media, we'll get into Twitter haters next, speaking of social media, But everything that Floyd does is calculated. We know this. He's a businessman. So when he posts a video of him hitting the heavy bag, whether it could have been from a year ago, but he posted it last week, got the people thinking. TMZ, as they do, they chased down Lampley, got a very candid response from Lampley, made some headlines, and here we are now. But that's it for In Case You Missed It. Joining us now inside Boxing Live, he's the Miracle Man, Danny Jacobs. He fights November 11th at Nassau Coliseum on HBO. Danny, how's it going, my man?
Everything's going great. Little 1 to 2 weeks out, so just finishing up the little touches and making sure no stone is unturned. And feeling great about the whole situation. Looking ready to put on a great show for New York City.
Yeah, you'd be fighting there at the Nassau Coliseum, HBO. Luis Arias, interesting stare down between you two, a lot of chirping going back and forth. How hard is it for you not to look past a fighter with some good wins in his career, as you obviously have your sights set on bigger and great things in the middleweight division?
It's not really hard. I mean, when you're a professional, I mean, it kind of comes naturally to you, as you know. This is boxing, and if you know anything about boxing, anything can happen. So if you look at it from that perspective, you always kind of be on your P's and Q's. I understand that he isn't the biggest threat, but he still is a threat. And I have to take him as serious as the next man, because you know, anytime that you look over any opponent, you know, whether it's physically, mentally, you know, he can some way, somehow slip through the cracks. And you know, we definitely don't want to do that. We want to look as impressive as we possibly can, and we want to get the victory in whatever manner that it comes in.
Yeah, they say in boxing, one punch can change anything, so you're absolutely right. That's the type of mentality that you got to keep. Let's talk about your move to Matchroom USA. It was a move that surprised many, but looking back at it now, it makes a lot of sense. Is that something that you seeked out? Did you seek out other promoters, or did Eddie Hearn come to you?
Well, I mean, I have my manager, Keith Conley. Thanks for that. He's been down with me since I was 16, 17 years old. And you have anybody who, you know, cares about you in the manner that he does, and our relationship being so great, you know, I just trust in him in the direction that he's taking my career. So as far as detail, you know, I can't really give out too many details as far as how it all happened, how it all came about, but I am grateful that it happened, and I'm grateful that I have all these opportunities that are presenting itself, and you know, I'm totally looking forward to taking advantage of them.
Now, obviously, you don't want to look past Luis Arias, as you stated before, but you made the move to HBO. You made the move to Matchroom Boxing because you want to get into the big fights. You fought Triple G. You put up a great performance. I want to talk to you about Canelo Alvarez. We saw what you did with Triple G. How do you think you stack up with a fighter the likes of Canelo?
I think ultimately in boxing, styles make fights. So, you know, I really believe that I can stop Canelo, and I say that for various reasons. But ultimately, styles make fights. So even though some would say I lost to Triple G and Triple G beat Canelo, you still have to look at it differently because, you know, like I said, styles make fights. I really believe that with the style that I possess, the experience, and you know, just my body structure and just the skills and everything that I possess, I really feel like I could be victorious in that fight.
Yeah, it's a fight that the fans want to see, and it's a fight that, I mean, a lot of the boxing fans and the boxing writers, they all want to see. But how many times do you want to fight in 2018?
Well, I'll be fighting at minimum three times in 2018. It's going to be a very busy year for me, something that I'm very grateful for, because all boxers want to stay busy and active and give the fans what they want to see. So I'm just grateful that I have fans that are, you know, supporting me, and they're just excited seeing me on HBO as I am, and I'm looking forward to taking advantage of it.
You talk about HBO, and you have fought on HBO before, the fight with Triple G, and earlier in your career, but this is like the first time that they're really investing in you. What do you think a platform like HBO can do for your career? I just watched a video on Instagram, very inspiring, about your backstory. Talk a little bit about you know, what it could do for you moving forward fighting with HBO.
Well, as fighters, you know, when you have managers and promoters who, you know, kind of are, you know, their job is to, you know, make you a superstar. But then you have a network, you know, and a network job is really, I mean, there are, HBO is one of the big premier and biggest networks that's out there. So if you're directly affiliated with a network, then that's, you know, that's guaranteed success, especially, you know, if they're investing into you. So that means that they want to make you a superstar, that so everybody can win across the board. And it's just a win-win situation for me. I think this opportunity in my life and my career, this new chapter, is going to be a great one. But like I said, having a network back you is one of the greatest things that a fighter can dream for, because, you know, from shuffling before, previously I was shuffling between different networks and different just, you know, people affiliated in the boxing world. But now that I'm stuck with someone, and now that I'm, I have someone who's going to back me, and they have that outlet that is huge, I think it's going to be a recipe for success.
We're talking with the Miracle Man, Danny Jacobs. He fights November 11th against Luis Arias. And I don't want to talk about too much of the past, but your fight with Triple G, it could be a rematch. You know, should he fight Canelo again? That fight hasn't been made, but we think it's going to be made. And he should win that. A rematch between you and Triple G, well, it's a fight that could possibly be made. If you can go back, going back on that performance, what would you change against Triple G?
Just probably would have been just a little bit more aggressive. Probably wouldn't have been on the back foot a little bit as I have. But, you know, I just think that sometimes these judges, they judge fight differently. And I think what should be changed in the sport of boxing is the criteria of judges and what they expect, so that we can know what we're getting ourselves into. Because what I can feel like is a masterful performance, you know, a judge might feel like is, you know, maybe lackluster, or he's not giving me the points because it's not desirable to him or her. So for me, I think that with the scoring, the way they scored the fight, obviously these judges are looking at more of an aggressive style of a fight. And for me, I just have to you know, implement that just a little bit more than what I have.
Well, something that not a lot of fans know is that in that fight, you actually outlanded Triple G in power, 145 to 127. Is a feat that doesn't really happen too often. So it's interesting that you bring up the judges there, because a lot of times they see something that you don't see. Look at, you know, with Adelaide Bird. What are your thoughts on the judging and the whole thing that happened with Adelaide Bird as well?
I don't really want to comment too much about that, because the public already spoke about that.
Yeah.
And how they feel about her and her judging. I just feel like, you know, I definitely wouldn't want her to judge any of my fights in the future, or, you know, I definitely wouldn't want to see anybody have to go through something like that. That just was not really, that wasn't good judging at all. And for me, I just, like I said, I have to take things into my hands. And if I can get a knockout, or if I can be dominant and be aggressive more than I have been, then, you know, it's a step up, and it's a step in the right direction. But to answer your question about Ms. Bird, man, I just think that, I won't say she's bad for the sport, but that scorecard that she had with Canelo and Triple G was just absurd.
It was absurd, and she's back judging. I don't know if you saw that, but that's a story for another day. But I saw you at Gleason's gym last week, and you came in with Chris Algieri, and as we saw in the lead up to your fight with Triple G, he's now a part of your camp, bringing the nutrition side to the games. Talk a little bit about your relationship with Algieri, and is he cooking up you any good meals for you lately, man?
No, Chris is awesome. And the good thing about Chris is that he's been at this level before. He's been at this stage before. He knows combat, and he knows a fighter's mentality. So, you know, when you have a former world champion, you know, there with you every day, going through your ups and your downs, but most importantly, making sure you get the right nutrition. It's a great, great, great situation to be in. You know, our relationship has grown in these last two fights as well. So, you know, now he's like family. He knows all of my family, and, you know, and I know flow. So you know, I just think that him being added to my team is just a great situation, and I look forward to having him, you know, in every fight possible from here on out.
Now, Danny, you're entering a very important stage in your career. You changed promoters. You're on a new network. You want to seek out the biggest fights. What do you want to see? How do you want to see your career maybe 3-4 years from now? How do you want it to play out?
Well, God willing, if everything can go according to plan, I would be the undisputed middleweight champion of the world. I would have probably moved up for some important fights, maybe at super middleweight, and then go off to the sunset. You know, I want to be a Hall of Famer. That's my ultimate goal. You know, but it all takes one fight at a time. And I can't really look past, you know, what some would consider the small steps, like the Luis Arias and, you know, the opponents in the near future if they're not top five. You know, I still really can't look over these guys because they are still on the progress to, they're on my way, my progress to greatness. So, you know, that's just really what I have to do is stay headstrong and be true to my sport and be dedicated to it and hope that all can come out great.
Yeah, you got the right mentality and you're taking it one step at a time. And I tell you what, we're really looking forward to seeing you back in the ring. We want to see you in the big fights, and it's good to see you on HBO with a network that supports you. One last message you have for the middleweight division, Danny Jacobs.
I'm here, and you know, it's gonna be a good time for the fans, most importantly. But I'm looking to make a name for myself. 2018 is gonna be that year. And yeah, I mean, best of luck to everyone. But I'm here to make a name for myself, and I'm not holding no bars, no holds bar. You know.
I like it, man. I appreciate you taking some time, and we'll hope to see you ringside. And good luck with everything, my man. That's Danny Jacobs, the Miracle Man, fighting November 11th versus Luis Arias, one of the true gentlemen of the sport, and he's got the right mentality. You know, obviously, when he signed with Matchroom and he made the move to HBO, it was a very calculated move for Danny and his manager, Keith Connolly. So shout out to Keith Connolly for getting us Danny to come on the show. But he wants Triple G again. He wants Canelo. He wants Saunders. He wants Lemieux. Andrade. I mean, HBO has invested in the 160-pound division, so it made sense to bring in Danny Jacobs. But he's got the right mentality when it comes to, you know, taking it one fight at a time. You're not going to look past Luis Arias. You know, you're not going to look past, you know, that fight. Because we all know that in the second half of 2018, or maybe in the middle of 2018, he's going to get a Canelo. He's going to get a Triple G. He could get Saunders. That's probably more likely. He might get the Saunders-Lemieux winner. And then Triple G, Canelo winner in late 2018. Wants to fight three times. Wants to get it going. And I love it. So big things coming from the Miracle Man, Danny Jacobs. Top story that we're talking about today on Inside Boxing Live. Don't forget to tweet us at CompuBox using the hashtag IBL. We like to interact with you because Inside Boxing Live is the show for the fans. But a lot of the talk in the boxing world today is about Anthony Joshua. Put on a performance over the weekend in front of 78,000 fans in Cardiff, Wales, taking out Carlos Takam in 10 rounds. We had Big Baby Jarrell Miller on the program. Wasn't exactly too complimentary of Joshua. You know, get that I wasn't expecting him to praise him because he could potentially be fighting him in 2018. But as for the performance from Joshua, I mean, he was great. I mean, he was good, not great. I mean, he was measured. He was a little more poised. He was too much headhunting. And that's something that Jarrell Miller talked about too, that he probably could have went to the body a little more. And Jarrell Miller is a fighter that likes to go to the body himself. But the heavyweight division right now, I mean, you take a look at everything that's going on in the heavyweight division. It's hot right now. I mean, it's getting its luster back, and it's getting, you know, its power back, for lack of a better term. But you know, Anthony Joshua, you take a look at that crowd. I mean, 78,000 fans. And he's fighting a guy in Takam that was a late replacement. This is a mandatory defense. This isn't a Klitschko. I'm almost more impressed with this crowd against the Com than I was for the 70,000 at Wembley for Klitschko, because that's a name. So Anthony Joshua right now is the face of boxing. I think he's supplanted Canelo Alvarez. I think that it's Anthony Joshua's – it's his time right now. I don't see Canelo putting 80,000 butts in the seats. I don't see the fans, the Mexican fans, clamoring undisputedly for Canelo like the Brits do for Anthony Joshua. He's got the gold medal. That's how he got onto the scene. And, you know, Eddie Hearn is in a little bit of a predicament here. He's in a great spot, let's be honest. He's got, you know, the face of boxing for the next 10 years. But it's going to come down to, does he want to take Anthony Joshua away from this market? You know, Anthony Joshua is going to want to fight in America. He's going to want to fight in the States. He's going to want to fight in, you know, an MSG or a Barclays Center in the biggest, you know, the media capital of the world. But that's also, you know, you're not going to get 70,000 fans unless they do it at Cowboy Stadium. You know, so Hearn is in a little bit of a spot here on what he wants to do. He's got great options. He can fight Jermell Miller. He can fight Big Baby Miller 2018, maybe in New York City at Barclays Center. He can fight Dillian White. He can fight Joseph Parker, who also has a belt. You know, Dillian White won his fight against Robert Helenius. Was it a great fight? No, it wasn't a great performance, but he won. So he keeps his name in there. But the heavyweight division, there's a lot going on, a lot of guys angling. And then, of course, you have Deontay Wilder, the American WBC heavyweight champion of the world, who's fighting Bermain Stiverne Saturday at the Barclays Center. There was, you know, Eddie Hearn said a lot of things after the fight, and one of those being that in February at the O2 Arena, he has a hold on early February where he wants Wilder to fight Dillian White. And Wilder's like, I'll do it. I'll fight Dillian White if it guarantees me a fight with Joshua. And that's when Hearn was like, no, that's not how it works. But, you know, they're all angling right now. So I think Wilder would be very smart, should he get past Stiverne, as we all think he will, to fight a Dillian White overseas. That'd be his first fight overseas. He could, you know, introduce himself to that market. And he's playing the game. He's playing the game with Hearn. Because if we saw anything on Saturday night, is that Anthony Joshua is the clear-cut A-side in this fight. He's bringing the fans. He's bringing the markets. He's bringing the viewers. You know, hate to say it, but Deontay Wilder is he's not doing that. He's got his fan base, but he's not doing Anthony Joshua numbers. So I'm really keeping an eye on the heavyweight division. You know, we talked to Jermell Miller earlier in the program. He had a message for the heavyweights. He said, you can run, but you can't hide. I mean, he's another name to look out for. But from that, we're going to transition right now into one of my favorite segments on the program. It's the hype train. Now, the hype train could be anything that I am excited about, anything that I'm pumped up for. It could be a fighter. It could be a venue. It could be some newsworthy a tidbit in the news, in the boxing world. But what I'm pumped up for right now is the World Boxing Super Series, and most notably, Murat Gassiev. I mean, this dude is a beast. He won his quarterfinal matchup in the World Boxing Super Series, third round body shot KO. Take a look at some of his highlights. This dude is a monster. And you see him move around the ring, cut off the ring. You can see how he comes from that Abel Sanchez school of teaching, cutting off the ring, going to the body. And you see little flashes of Golovkin. When I was watching that fight, I was just taking a look at his footwork and how he was cutting off the ring. You know, he cuts off the ring almost better than Golovkin does. And he took out his opponent three rounds, got him in and out, which should bode well for him with the World Boxing Super Series. And I want to talk a little bit about how much of a success the World Boxing Super Series is. And, you know, you got to take your hat off to Richard Schaefer and Ringstar Promotions. I mean, Richard Schaefer, we should have known that he was going to do something like this. I mean, the guy has a great track record, whether it was with Golden Boy when De La Hoya had his issues and Schaefer was kind of running the show for Golden Boy, brought it to the top. Whether it's, you know, dealing with Floyd Mayweather and kind of helping him navigate his pay-per-view career, Richard Schaefer knows what he's doing. So when he had his little timeout from boxing during that whole lawsuit where he couldn't had a non-compete, the wheels were turning in his head, and what he came up with was the World Boxing Super Series, kind of like a little bit of play off of the Super 6 that Showtime did a few years back, but this one seems like it's more organized and it's got better fighters in it. I mean, the cruiserweight division, I mean, used to be thought of as the armpit. It used to be thought of as the stepping stone to the heavyweight division, but, I mean, look at this tournament we got here. Take a look at the brackets there. Usyk, number one seed, He had an impressive win. He goes up against Bredis in the semifinals. And then you got two KO artists in Gassiev going up against Dorticos. I mean, you can't ask for more from the World Boxing Super Series. I mean, they sell out the arenas. You look at the interest in it worldwide. I think Schaefer was very smart to do these fights at different locations, you know, whether it's in the A-side's hometown or home city, you know, Latvia, England, you know, they're in Germany. They have the big light ceremonies, and it's a big production, and the fans are into it. The only knock that I have on it, and it's that maybe they underestimated the type of appeal it would have and response, is that it's not on US TV. There's no network that's picked it up so far. You had the Audience Network, which is a network that's only picked up on DirecTV. So it was a small audience. They need to get on an HBO or a Showtime. Maybe, I don't know, ESPN has their hands full with the Top Rank deal. And Epix, you know, Epix is looking to get back into boxing. As we highlighted in the last show, they're trying to bring back the Contender Series. Maybe Epix will want to air it. I mean, you got to get some more eyeballs on this, because we're setting up some huge fights in 2018. I mean, Groves and Eubank, that's a can't-miss fight. I mean, in addition to the cruiserweights, you got the super middleweight bracket too, the 168. Groves and Eubank are going to fight early 2018. Callum Smith, he's going to get in there, do his thing. I mean, it's been a great success, and I would not be surprised to see how they handle this in 2018 or 2019. Are they going to do lower weights? I know Rigondeaux responded to a tweet from World Boxing Super Series. They had a little back and forth saying, Rigondeaux said, I'd do this, you know, at 122 to 130. So the fighters are interested in it, and the people love the bracket style. It just settles who's the best in the division. I mean, it's going to be hard to do it with divisions. You know, maybe 140, 147, you could probably wipe that out because of the politics of boxing. They just got lucky with the super middleweight bracket and the cruiserweight division of fighters that are willing to fight, that the schedule's all lined up, and I think it's a great thing. So hats off to Richard Schaefer, Ringstar. We have to get him on the program moving forward, but Murat Gassiev is a guy to look forward to fighting here at the World Boxing Super Series. All right, it's time for my favorite segment of the show. It's Twitter hitters. These are the tweets coming right from the source, right from the boxers' fingers and thumbs as they get on their keyboards and they type away. Our first one comes from Vasyl Lomachenko. He's gearing up for Rigondeaux now. He's out having a nice, easy time in his camp, taking some time out from training to kick the soccer ball. This guy can do it all. Lefty, no less. Posted a nice little video. Probably didn't think it was going to get any blowback, but of course. Rigondeaux was waiting. He was waiting at his laptop, and he types this up. This summarizes your boxing career. You versus no one, or you versus an easy opponent. No more of that. On December 9th, I will be the goalie. Be ready. And if you follow Rigondeaux, you can see that these are the types of tweets that he's constantly firing off. Whether it's him actually behind the Twitter account, because I know that Triple G may or may not do his Twitter because he speaks like as a caricature of himself. Rigondeaux's the same way. I mean, he loves to get on Twitter and interact, and right, he's been chirping back and forth with Lomachenko. So I expect more of that to go on. Of course, send us your tweets here for Twitter hitters. Moving on with the next one. Of course, what would it be a Twitter segment without Amir Khan? What is Amir Khan talking about these days? A fight with Kell Brook? Maybe another getting back into the ring against a formidable opponent? No. Amir Khan's calling out Floyd Mayweather. Of course. He says, in any fight I've never been outboxed. Mayweather-Khan would be a game of chess. Speed, movement, and accuracy will cause him problems. Amir Khan just doesn't get it, man. Amir Khan has himself a potential big fight with Kell Brook down the line. Or it could happen in 2018. But he's fixated on the past. We know from Amir Khan, he was fixated on getting that Mayweather fight, fixated on fighting Pacquiao. He got Canelo, you know, which he got iced in. He fought beautifully for, you know, how many of the rounds he lasted before he got knocked out cold. But why not just have some awareness? He's living in a fantasy world if he's calling out Floyd Mayweather. And we talk about a fight with him and Kell Brook. Kell Brook saw that tweet. He probably thought what everyone was thinking. And he responded, if you want to play kiss chase with retired men, shame, really. Get in with me and I'll fast track you into collecting your pension. That's a well-crafted tweet. I mean, Rigondeaux's are kind of corny. That one was good. Kell Brook brought the heat with that one. Didn't just say, you know, why don't you just fight me? I'll fast track you into straight collecting your pension. That's sophisticated trash talk. That's what we like to see on Twitter hitters. And I want to see Kell Brook and Amir Khan finally get their fight done. It's a fight that both guys are coming off losses, but they're still marketable overseas. They're always in good, exciting fights. Give me that fight. Enough of Khan calling out Mayweather, calling out Pacquiao. Just stop with that, Khan. Moving forward with Twitter hitters. This is a good one. So Sky Sports, a big network over the pond, puts out a poll. Is Anthony Joshua Britain's greatest heavyweight ever? That's when Lennox Lewis chimed in, responded to the tweet. Things like this make me wonder who's running Sky Sports Net these days. AJ is thumbs up good, but is this really what's on their minds over there? Like, what intern decided to tweet that? Who got caught up in the moment thinking Anthony Joshua is the greatest heavyweight from Britain? Yeah, he could be one day, but let's not forget about Lennox Lewis, one of the greatest heavyweights of all time, regardless of where he comes from, the Jamaican Brit. The dude retired on top. It's not even a question. I mean, that's just, sometimes these guys get a little ahead of themselves, and you know, who knows who's running the social media at Sky Sports, but maybe they should have thought that one out before you hit send on the phone. What else do we got here? Moving forward, Twitter hitters. It wouldn't be a segment without Tyson Fury checking in. So Tyson Fury's seeing everything that's going on in the heavyweight division right now, and he's sitting at home, 400 pounds, and he's putting those Twitter fingers to work because he feels like he's left out. So he tweeted, if Anthony Joshua adopts the Mike Tyson style versus me, I'll adopt the Muhammad Ali style that's coming back after years out and beating the bully. I mean, you had Eddie Hearn in the ring against after Joshua. What was the first name that came out of his mouth? Tyson Fury. Not Wilder, not Dillian White, not Jarrell Miller. Tyson Fury. He wants that fight. It was a fight that was almost inevitable a few years back when Joshua was just on the come up and Tyson Fury had just taken out Vladimir Klitschko. But we all know what happened to Tyson Fury. He's 400 pounds. He has going through some personal issues that are nothing to laugh about. But I want to see a comeback. Everyone loves a good comeback story. Tyson Fury, does he have the most exciting style in the ring? Absolutely not. But he brings with him a certain flair, and he can talk. I think they'll build up for a potential Joshua Fury fight. It will be tremendous. And, of course, he sings in the ring after. But that's only if he wins. So I want to see. I'm rooting for Tyson Fury. Tyson, if you're watching this, keep tweeting. Stop eating. And we want to see you in the ring. Ending out our Twitter hitter segment here is a guy that was probably going to be featured every week because Mikey Garcia enjoys Twitter. And he is a free agent and he likes to answer his critics. He likes to answer the fans. He also likes to answer Golden Boy matchmaker and executive Eric Gomez at Make a War. That's a very good follow if you want to follow a guy that's very candid, is Eric Gomez. Matchmaker at Golden Boy tweeted, at Mikey Garcia, if you are serious about wanting to fight Jorge Linares, call me. No options, no extra fights, straight up, hashtag no excuses. The pre-story to this is that we all know that Mikey Garcia called out Cotto on Twitter in everywhere. And the story on that was, which was revealed on Twitter from Mikey Garcia, was that they offered Golden Boy offered him the Cotto fight with the stipulation that he fights maybe two or three fights on Golden Boy afterwards, which they call that in the business options. So yeah, we'll give you your one of your biggest paydays of your career, biggest fight of your career against Cotto, but you have to stick with Golden Boy. You have to stick with us for two to three fights afterwards. Standard procedure in boxing. Garcia said no. I'm going to stay with the course of what I'm doing right now. I can get big fights. But apparently, Eric Gomez says that he can fight Linares straight up. No options. None of that stuff. And I think Garcia responded. And he said, dude, you have my phone number. No need to put this out on Twitter. Which was an interesting response because Mikey Garcia puts everything on Twitter. But when he gets called out about, you know, no excuses, that's when he pulls the whole, you know, hit me up on my cell phone, not on Twitter. So it's just always something with boxing, always something with the boxing Twitter. I mean, from the trolls out there to the guys that are following along on the fight night to the actual fighters. These guys have a lot of time on their hands, and they have to promote themselves somehow. It's not a team sport. You're not going to get in trouble for tweeting something crazy. And we've seen that with Twitter haters. Of course, you can always submit your favorite tweets, or if you see something on Twitter that you think is hilarious coming from a fighter, tweet us at CompuBox, tweet us at Dan Canelbio. We'll make sure to get it featured on Twitter hitters. We had the chance to talk to Dimitri Salida. He is the promoter for Big Baby Miller, who fights on November 11th at the Nassau Coliseum on HBO. Is a big name in the heavyweight division. Could be fighting in 2018 versus some of the big names in the sport. Don't forget to check it out on our YouTube page. Here are some of the highlights from that interview. Joining us now, Inside Boxing, we are with the promoter for Jarrell Miller and Clarissa Shields. He's Dimitri Salida. How you doing, Dimitri?
Everything is great. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you got your start as an ex-boxer. You had a nice little career for yourself, and now you're in the promotion game. Talk a little bit about how you went from pro fighter and then now with your promoter hat on.
Well, I promoted several of my fights myself, and after I fought for the world title and lost to Amir Khan, I really want to get back to fighting very soon, and I just didn't have the right opportunity and kind of the right deal. So, you know, I kind of thought to myself, you know, I have a great following in New York City. Why don't I just start and see how it goes? And we started it, and, you know, and our first several shows were a great success. And then different fighters, you know, I had a great relationship with the fighters, with the trainers, with the managers from growing up in New York City, from growing up in the boxing gyms. And they started to reach out to me and asking me to be put on the shows, and I put them on without signing them. You know, Jarrell's actually one of these guys that put on my show, Louis Collazo, Will Rosinski. I mean, just a bunch of fighters from New York that are very, very good world-class fighters. And then about a little more than 3 years ago, we really developed this infrastructure and started doing stuff consistently outside of my fights. And, you know, then we started signing fighters like, you know, good fighters like Jarrell Miller and other New York talent. You know, and started to progress them slowly but surely.
Now, Dimitri, you talk about your relationship with Jarrell Miller, and he's signed to your promotion company. He's got a big fight November 11th at Nassau Coliseum. I don't want to look past that fight, but he's a name that's being thrown around in the heavyweight division as a potential opponent for Anthony Joshua, also with Deontay Wilder. Talk a little bit about how you signed and when you signed Jarrell Miller and what you saw in him at that time.
Well, I know Jarrell for a very long time. I know from the New York gyms. He's a little bit younger than I am, and he used to be in my training camps in the Poconos, then when I started to promote shows, I put him on, you know, before signing him. And it was really amazing to me that Jarrell was so talented and has such a bright personality and has so much guts, you know, to get in the ring and fight the best. He had this since he's very young. And I was really, you know, unsure why some of them kind of, you know, bigger promoters at that time and more established didn't pay attention to Jarrell. But I thought that he was, you know, a diamond in the rough. And we started to keep him busy. He progressed, you know, in the Brooklyn Brawl Series in New York. And, you know, we built him as the best American heavyweight. And I feel that there's a real need for an American heavyweight, for a Brooklyn American heavyweight. A Brooklyn, New York guy that's following in the footsteps of Riddick Bowe and Mike Tyson. There's a lot of boxing fans that still have a nostalgic feeling of the great days of the American heavyweights, of the Brooklyn heavyweights. And Jarrell is not only a very talented, great fighter, but he also has a tremendous personality. And, you know, he is the type of guy that you want to hug outside the ring, but when you get inside the ring, he's going to kick your butt. And so he's really has a lot of ingredients that you just can't teach and you can't promote. He's just born with that kind of stuff. And another great thing about Jarrell is that he talks the talk and he walks the walk. You know, he wants to fight the best fighters in the division, and you know he has done so in a last fight, and he's doing so again, and he's taking a step up, and he wants to fight the best available guys out there. And I feel that with his personality and his skills, he really has the ability to cross over to the non-boxing and to really, you know, bring even more excitement to the now talent pack heavyweight division.
Yeah, I mean, we had him on our show, and he's a very personable guy. I've met him a few times over the years. You're absolutely right, a big teddy bear type of personality, but he's willing to fight anyone. And he's a very hot commodity right now in the heavyweight division. There's rumors of him potentially fighting Anthony Joshua or Dillian White. Have you had any discussions with Eddie Hearn about Jarrell Miller?
Well, very general. You know, we take it one fight at a time. You know, obviously, if those guys come to the United States, you know, Jarrell Miller is on top of that list. But again, we take it one fight at a time, and Jarrell has a very big fight ahead of him with a top 10 heavyweight on November 11th in Nassau Coliseum on HBO. And we're very focused on that, and Jarrell is very focused on getting himself in great condition and being able to perform in front of his hometown fans. And I feel, you know, based on everything I see and what I hear from his trainers and what I see myself in the gym, Jarrell is really... and Walker's a very tough guy. He's won 12 rounds with Klitschko.
Mm-hmm.
He's some of the best guys in the world, and he's a really durable guy. And there's very few guys that are bigger and taller than Jarrell. And Walker, we did the pre-fight press conference, you know, he's taller than Jarrell, and he's a really big guy. So it's very rarely when Jarrell looks up at somebody, but he was looking up at Walker. So I think that's going to present a different kind of challenge. And I think it's going to be a very exciting fight. But I expect Jarrell to put an explosive, tremendous performance on November 11th at Nassau Coliseum.
Dimitri Salida, Salida Promotions. Very interesting guy. Ex-fighter, fighting out of Brooklyn, New York. Not an ex-fighter, he said he still fights. But he had a nice career. He fought Amir Khan. He's been in the ring with some greats, and now he's putting his promotional hat on. And he's got some two big-time fighters in Jarrell Miller and Kalicious Shields. So big things coming from Jarrell Miller, and it's interesting because he's in a very good spot, Jarrell Miller. So should he win on November 11th and Eddie Hearn comes calling, or Lou DiBella comes calling with Deontay Wilder, Dimitri Salida is going to answer that phone call, and he's going to try to get his man the biggest fight. But you're watching Inside Boxing Live, Dimitri Salida. Thank you very much. All right, time to end the show on a positive note, as we always do. It's time for the good hook of the week. And this week it comes from Oscar De La Hoya, Miguel Cotto, and Golden Boy Promotions. As we all know, Miguel Cotto has a fight coming up December 2nd. The last of his career will be going down at Madison Square Garden. And Golden Boy, Miguel Cotto, and Oscar De La Hoya all announced that the proceeds from the ticket sales from this fight will go towards relief for Puerto Rico, as they are still fighting back, and they are still trying to get their country there up, back, and going. So it's good to see this in boxing. It's good to see, you know, them doing something. I mean, I know there was a lot of talk about what could they do, and I knew Miguel Cotto was going to do something. He's a very proud countryman from Puerto Rico. So December 2nd, in his final fight, I'm sure there's going to be a heavy Puerto Rican contingent. As we know, with Cotto, he brings those fans with him, especially at Madison Square Garden. So good on De La Hoya. Good on Cotto donating their proceeds to aid those in Puerto Rico still looking for relief. Also, Felix Trinidad, also obviously from Puerto Rico, he brought up a very cool little idea here. Maybe he can get into the ring with Oscar De La Hoya in a charity matchup between two 44-year-olds. And that would actually be kind of cool. You know, maybe they set up for 4 to 6 rounds. And, you know, the proceeds from that, I mean, I would tune in. I think a lot of people would tune in if you maybe put it on a stream and charged, you know, $5, or with a stream with a running side with, you know, people that can donate there. I know that CompuBox would be down to count the punches for that one. Who knows? Maybe this second fight will be better than the first one. I mean, the first 6 rounds were fun, and then the final 6 were pretty dull. So maybe they can make up for it here with 6 rounds of boxing that goes towards a charity. So that's something to keep your eye on here. Is Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad, maybe getting into the ring for charity terms. But good on De La Hoya, Golden Boy, and Miguel Cotto for donating to the cause there over in Puerto Rico. That's going to be it for the show. Nick, do you have anything? I know it's Halloween week. This past weekend, you know, a lot of people had Halloween parties. I know that you're going to be dealing with the trick-or-treaters with your daughter. And anything, you got anything going on? Are they going to be coming to the house on this week at Halloween?
I hope so. My wife Paige bought about 10 pounds of candy, so I'm either going to hand them out or I'm going to get 10 pounds fatter.
What about the egg? Are you worrying about people throwing eggs at the house?
I don't think that. Not in my neighborhood. We live in the suburb. It's good. I don't think we have to worry about that. What about you?
I had a party Saturday night in Brooklyn. It was a great night. I had a pretty good costume. I got a lot of good feedback on my costume.
Actually, we do have a picture of that.
Oh, there it is. The Fighting Pride of Ireland. Yeah, that's me as Conor McGregor. That's about 5 pounds of fake tattoos on my chest. I don't know if anyone noticed during the show. I got them off of my neck yesterday, but there are still some remnants all over my chest. You can see I couldn't get it off. It was a good night. I mean, a lot of tattoos. I don't think I could ever live with those many tattoos, but it was a great night. We had a party over in Brooklyn. I was running around with money. I had the CompuBox microphone. I was calling out Paulie Malignaggi left and right. I know he's also from Brooklyn. I was screaming, where is Malignaggi?
I think we found him.
I want Malignaggi. Oh, jeez. Wow. Apparently, Paulie thinks it's Halloween, too. Take a look at that. Wow, the magic man. Yeah, I think I can take him. I think I can take Paulie. I know that he's still clamoring for that fight on Twitter any chance he can get. That's just not a sight that I want to see right there from Paulie Malignaggi. But that's it. That's the show. Thank you to everyone. Danny Jacobs. Thank you to Jarrell Miller for calling in. Great work from you, Nicholas. As always, don't forget to tweet us at CompuBox using the hashtag IBL with your thoughts, your opinions, questions, anything. You can always tweet me too at Dan Canobio. Always remember, Inside Boxing Live is the show for the fans. We'll see you next week, Inside Boxing Live. Thanks for watching. Hope you enjoyed the video. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube page. I pity the fool who doesn't.